Due to the coronavirus pandemic, state and local governments face unprecedented financial hardship. Sydney Bowles spoke with regional economists about what the coming months could bring in the Ohio Valley.
The numbers are mind-boggling. 38 million Americans are unemployed, about 2.5 million of them in the Ohio Valley. Even economists find it hard to grasp. John Deskins directs the Bureau of Business and Economic Research at West Virginia University, and he says the coronavirus pandemic challenges economic modeling that relies on recent patterns and data.
The notion that the national economy would go from 3-point-something percent unemployment to 20% unemployment in 6 weeks, we've never heard of that before.
Then there are the unknowns regarding what happens to the virus itself. Will there be a second wave or a vaccine? But Jason Bailey, the executive director of the left-leaning Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, says even the control forecast, or a rosier scenario, is likely worse than the 2007-2008 financial crisis.
I should say the control forecast is still a terrible forecast when it comes to the unemployment rate, when it comes to revenues for the government. I mean, it's still worse by far than anything we've seen in our lifetimes.
All of this has huge implications for state and local government in the Ohio Valley. Bailey says that in a recession,
consumers spend less, businesses spend less. The only state and local government spend less. The only entity left is the federal government. And so if they don't step in, then a recession turns into a depression.
A lot of that will depend on the outcome of a debate raging in Washington right now about federal aid to those governments. The Democratic-led House of Representatives passed a $3 trillion spending package, but Kentucky Senator and Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has expressed skepticism about more spending. He even said he'd prefer to let states declare bankruptcy, although he's since walked back that comment. In McConnell's home state, the general fund could face as much as a $495 million shortfall for the fiscal year that ends this June. That's a shortfall of almost 5%. Ohio and West Virginia also face significant budget shortfalls. And it's not just the states. The Kentucky League of Cities, an advocacy group, reported that municipalities in the Commonwealth could miss out on $85 million by the end of the next fiscal year. In a survey of Kentucky mayors, most said they would face shortfalls in parks, public works, and police budgets. J.D. Cheney is the executive director of the KLC.
Most cities set around about a 10-15% reduction in their budget over the previous fiscal year's spending limit. That's pretty significant for us.
One of the mayors who responded to Cheney's survey is Todd DePriest of Jenkins in eastern Kentucky. Jenkins is home to about 2,000 people, and DePriest says it was already dealing with an extraordinarily tight budget.
But yeah, we're more or less on a, you know, unless it's emergency purchase or something that have to, you know, we're not buying anything extra. If we've got a utility truck that needs tires, we're going to have to look if it really needs them right now, or can we put it off for a month or two?
Cities have to pass new budgets for the start of the fiscal year on July 1st. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Early voting for the West Virginia's June 9th primary elections begins tomorrow. But with voters able to request an absentee mail-in ballot due to the ongoing pandemic, some votes have already been cast. But that's not the only thing that makes this election one to watch. In this two-part series, reporter Dave Mistich takes a look at some key races the parties have identified this election cycle and some ideological divides that are making their way to the forefront.
Before the coronavirus made its way to West Virginia and delayed the state's primary, the upcoming election was already shaping up to be one of the most closely watched in recent years. West Virginia Wesleyan College political science professor Robert Rupp says the upcoming primary stands out for a few reasons.
One is we moved the date, and second of all, we're changing the way, the method we vote by this big push for absenteeism. So it's a historic primary in many ways, and because of the virus, it's been underreported and hardly seen.
As far as races to watch, Rupp points to each party's gubernatorial primary as being a pivotal moment in the state's political history. Namely, that's because incumbent governors are rarely challenged within their own party. Governor Jim Justice is one exception to that rule. With former State Commerce Secretary and businessman Woody Thrasher and former delegate Michael Folk among the top challengers running to win the GOP nomination.
Governor Justice has a lot of baggage between the residents and the fact that he was elected as a Democrat. So I'm going to be looking to see if that baggage is going to make a surprise in the primary, because he's a very unusual governor in this state.
But Rupp says the focus on Justice and the race for the Republican nomination for governor isn't the most interesting aspect of this year's primary for the state's top office. He says that comes from the other side of the aisle, with eight Democratic candidates in the race.
The fact is that the Democratic Party is in the middle of an identity crisis. If Republicans have to decide if they want to keep the current Republican governor, Democrats have to decide which way are they on. Are they reformist or are they revolution? What should the party do since it obtained minority status?
Top contenders in the race for the Democratic nomination are Kanawha County Commissioner Ben Salengo, community organizer Stephen Smith, and physician and state senator Ron Stallings. Salengo has the backing of state Democratic stalwart U.S. Senator Joe Manchin. Smith is running a grassroots, small-dollar fundraising campaign that promises sweeping social reforms for the state. And Stallings has touted his experience in state government and has positioned himself as a moderate. While Rupp says the gubernatorial primaries are the main races to watch, he points to other marquee figures in the state's political sphere that are seeing challenges within their own parties, most notably the president of the state Senate.
Mitch Carmichael is being challenged in the Republican primary. This shouldn't be happening according to history or textbook.
Carmichael, who drew the ire of West Virginia teachers over the past 2 years for his push for charter schools and other controversial education reforms, is being challenged by Delegate Jim Butler for the 4th Senatorial District. Butler has positioned himself as more conservative than Carmichael, taking aim at Carmichael's push for a last dollar in grant program for community college and expressing support for equal rights for LGBTQ communities. While political parties are understandably timid when it comes to weighing in on their own primaries, West Virginia Republican Party Executive Director Byron Fisher says he feels the depth of candidates shows that the GOP has continued to pick up momentum since taking control of the state house in 2014. Part of that, Fisher says, is President Donald Trump's big win here in 2016.
Republicans were already moving that. West Virginia was already moving that way when President Trump was elected. So I think it's his popularity, but it's also the values and the policies that he and the Republican Party espouse and seek to implement.
Fisher also notes that Republicans have a candidate on the ballot in all races, except for 3 seats in the House of Delegates.
It is a sign of a strong, vibrant, growing party that we have a lot of candidates interested in the office of governor or any office that we have that's contested. It means that the nomination is something worth having, and the party, Republican Party in West Virginia, is strong and ascendant.
Fisher says the West Virginia Republican Party is also keeping a close eye on the 3 seats up for the state Supreme Court that will be decided this upcoming election. While those races are nonpartisan, he says the state GOP has endorsed 3 candidates, current Justice Tim Armstead, Laura Dyer, and Chris Raines.
I don't think it's necessarily partisan, but there is a certain view that does seem to fall down partisan lines.
Campaign finance reports certainly reflect that there's a partisan influence on the races for the state's high court. The Republican State Leadership Committee's Judicial Fairness Initiative has made big dollar donations in support of Armstead, Dyer, and Raines. Democrats see the nonpartisan Supreme Court races, which will ultimately be decided in the June 9th election, as confusing for some voters.
In my books, there's no such thing as nonpartisan, and we absolutely identify who the Democrats in those races are.
That's West Virginia Democratic Party Chair Belinda Biafor. For her, the old system, which had judges clearly identified with one party or another, worked much better. The nonpartisan election of judges in West Virginia began in 2016.
The only way that voters really had a way to gauge who would be a good Supreme Court justice or a magistrate or a judge was to know if they were a Democrat or Republican, because knowing how they were registered would give you a good idea of knowing what they stood for and what values and things were important to them. So taking that all away and just throwing everybody in a bunch, I just think has been unfair to voters.
Beaufort says she and Democrats also don't take sides in their own primaries. But she says they're keeping their eyes on the Republicans in the state Senate and how races will shape up for November.
In the Eastern Panhandle with Patricia Rucker, you know, I think the voters over there felt like she doesn't listen to what they had to say. When it came to charter schools, they were not in favor of them, but yet she did everything in her power to make sure that that passed. And I think that she lost touch with folks over there.
Jefferson County Sheriff Pete Daugherty is running against Rucker. Both are uncontested in their respective primaries for the state's 16th senatorial district and will face off against one another in November. But Beaufort says she and the Democrats have their eyes on other big-named Republicans and their primary races.
As far as Mitch Carmichael, absolutely, he's at the top of our list. Should he even make it through the primary? But we're looking at taking him out.
More on West Virginia's primary election in just a minute. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:55. Areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today, highs in the 80s. Partly cloudy overnight with lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness with a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms in the south, highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Hollow Hills Farm, home of the West Virginia Renaissance Festival in Greenbrier County, offering guided trail rides, private party facilities, and organic produce. More on Facebook. To the coronavirus, a key feature of this year's primary election is that all West Virginia voters are eligible to vote by mail-in ballot. Dave Mistich continues his report looking at that issue.
While each party is excited to see who will make the ballot come November, there's another ideological battle brewing this election cycle: expanded absentee voting because of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Following President Trump's lead, Republicans across the country are taking issue with the widespread implementation of absentee voting by mail. West Virginia Republicans like Byron Fisher are questioning the integrity of such votes in the primary.
You know, there are reasons why people vote absentee. And so, you know, that is certainly valid. But in terms of this upcoming election, we are really encouraging people, encouraging Republicans to vote early in person or vote on election day in person, if at all possible.
West Virginia's chief elections officer, Secretary of State Mac Warner, recently sent allegations of mail-in fraud to the state's U.S. attorneys for further investigation. Beaufort says absentee voting has been around a while and works just fine.
It's nothing new. Of course, it became a bigger pool of people that were be using that type vote. But the real disappointment I find is that the governor and the attorney general and the secretary of state all worked with the county, the state chairman, and came up with this plan, introduced this plan, and now all of a sudden it's not a good plan. I think that's unfortunate.
West Virginia Wesleyan College professor Robert Rupp says voters should expect to see more non-traditional ways of voting being used in the future. He says the squabble over absentee voting misses the true intent of our election system and democracy in general.
My belief is that within 10 years, we'll probably not only be voting by mail, we'll probably be doing online if we have the technology to do it. Because the key isn't showing up on election day. The key is a referendum that is honest for voters to express their opinion.
The deadline to submit an application for an absentee ballot is Wednesday, June 3rd. Those mail-in ballots must be postmarked by Election Day, which is Tuesday, June 9th. Early voting starts Wednesday, May 27th, and runs through the Saturday before the election. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
For more information on how to vote early, how to vote absentee by mail, and other details on West Virginia's primary election, visit us online at wvpublic.org. Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.